What is up, Hockey IQ listeners? I'm here to chat about our newest sponsor, Sensarena. Your brain is one of the most important parts of your body. Why not invest in a tool that allows you to train it? With Sensarena, athletes can gain a competitive edge using VR training. Players are able to go through a scenario thousands of times without having to step foot on the ice. No more waiting around for puck touches or perfect scenarios. Sensarena can enhance reaction time, decision-making, and multitasking abilities, making you the next MVP. I mean, if the LA Kings are using it, it's got to be good. With our promo code HockeyIQ, you receive $50 off an annual plan purchase. Head on over to Sensarena.com to check it all out.
On the Hockey IQ podcast today, we bring on the Kent State golf coach, former, I'm pretty sure, all-academic, all-American, John Mills, straight out of Canada. Good to have you.
Thanks, Greg. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, I was thinking about, why do Canadians love Kent State golf? And it struck me that in our neck of the woods, we have some of the best maple syrup in the world, and it has to be part of the reason.
Absolutely.
They want to come.
I'm sure that has some connection to it.
I mean, I was tapping my trees this week and it's flown well, tasting delicious.
In my household, that's the only syrup I have. The kids are in, they're not allowed to touch my pure maple syrup.
None of this fake stuff. It kills me. Like, I can't go to a restaurant and order pancakes anymore. Once you make it yourself, you're like, no way. So, obviously, Kent State Golf is one of those legendary programs where you get some of the finest golfers in the world, particularly from Canada. It's amazing. Yourself, you got Mackenzie Hughes, and a host of other Canadians that have come down and played well. Where did that come from? I'm assuming that Kent State was one of the first to really go maybe international and realize the unbelievable golfing talent that probably driven because we can shoot a hockey puck all right up there in Canada.
Yeah, I think, Coach Page, who was here before me, was one of the first coaches to go up there and recruit and was bringing all these Canadians down. In fact, even when he started the women's team, he pretty much built it from women players. And, you get all these kids up there that are, playing hockey in the winter and then playing golf in the summer. And once they get down here and they focus all on golf, they get really good very quick. And, it shows with guys like Mackenzie Hughes and, again, Taylor Pendrith, Corey Connors. And even before that, there was guys, even when I was being recruited, there was Canadians that were coming down here that we were all kind of like, that's the place to go. Kent State, we got to go there.
Yeah. And I'm going to call him Mr. Page because he's kind of a legend. He was one heck of a coach.
Yeah.
From all I've heard about him is he demanded a lot out of his players and really did not like excuses. I'm curious from your perspective, what was he like?
Yeah, that's a good way to – very competitive and didn't take any crap. And it was kind of like a little bit of that old school. He had a lot of influence in he actually played football at Kent State and had this, like, hockey football background and coached like that. And, for golf, I think it was a little, like, out of the norm to coach like that, so aggressive. But he got the most out of his players. And I think, you look at the results, of the history here, it definitely was the main reason why Kent State was so good for such a long time.
I also heard that he also had a soft side, that he would have players write handwritten notes to the tournaments that they just completed and competed in. From my perspective, that's one of the coolest things ever. It's like, okay, we're gonna go battle really hard, be competitive, not make excuses, but also we understand, there's this spirit of sport and humanity and everything else, and just having that awareness and gratitude of, like, not taking anything for granted.
Yeah, and we still do that today. It's one of those things that I learned from him, even when I graduated and went on to play professional golf, like sending thank you letters to the tournament directors and maybe even reaching out to the guy who won the event that you're playing in and congratulating him and just stuff like that. I think it goes a long way in the sport and developing those like relationships that last obviously a long time.
And obviously make Kent State known as a great team to have at these tournaments as well. I assume you're probably getting invites back consistently.
Absolutely. Yep.
Golf is obviously a very one person sport, but also it's very mental. I'm curious from your perspective, mental strength on a golf course, knowing when to pick your spots on a golf course. There's a lot of these things that relate to life. I'm curious, as you're coaching, what are some areas of focus that you're trying to give to your players to best prepare them for competition and understanding the ups and downs and riding the wave? Because I gotta say, from my perspective at least, golf is definitely a game of mistakes and just trying to make less of them and not massive mistakes.
Yeah, you know what's funny? Yeah, golf is extremely mental, and you have so much time out on the golf course. We're playing tournaments that you might be out there for 5, 6 hours, and you've only got yourself to kind of talk to. And it is something that we try to emphasize. Like you want to go out there and enjoy the competition, be able to kind of free yourself up and be able to kind of the biggest thing is accepting a bad result. People go out and play and they're like, I don't want to hit it here. I don't want to do this. And that's the wrong way to think. You have this body of work of practice and you go into it and you are good with whatever comes out. You're going to try your hardest and you want to shoot your lowest score. But by doing that, you have to almost let go of that control because in golf, there's very little you can control on the golf course. So don't waste time dwelling on thing too with like, how many guys do you play golf with? Or and it happens at every level where a guy makes a say a double bogey and then they get pissed at themselves and it bothers them for a couple holes and that's the kind of elite players, elite college players, elite professional players, they don't let that bother them. It's something that they can't control. You why dwell on something that's happened in the past?
Yeah, you don't want to let one mistake become two mistakes, three mistakes, and before you know it, it's completely out of control. If you're gonna make one, make it. And then, like you said, like control the controllables. Like there's so much, like a bad bounce, or like you put it in the right spot, but it rolls a little bit too far, and now you got a bad spot that you're playing from. It's quite the sport when it comes to understanding yourself and being able to process emotions. I
Yep.
am curious with golf, right? There's a lot of people, I think they call them range rats, where you just go
Yep.
out to the range and hit balls all day. But from my perspective, it's almost like you need to put the little bit of adversity in the range rat. Like the guys who probably go out and play golf all day are understanding how to play bad lies or weird lies that you normally wouldn't see, but happen every once in a while. And have a competitive advantage because it's just more realistic to what's going to be out there, or it's going to be on a slope up or down. There's so much from a representativeness of going out and playing golf, but also the efficiency of the range rat who's able to just continuously hit balls over and over. I'm curious your thoughts between being a range rat versus getting out on a golf course and being able to see kind of those realistic and representative type of environments.
Yeah, it's a challenge because kids nowadays have so much access to technology and they watch golf swings and they analyze things and they want to hit balls. Like, we have guys on our team that want to hit, if I let them hit balls all day, they probably would. And going back to when I was young, we would go out and go to the golf course and just play all day. when I was in college here, we did the exact same thing. And now that I'm coaching, we do the exact same thing. The guys that tend to be the better players are the ones that just want to golf every day. They sprinkle in some practice because obviously there's a benefit to that, but they understand the importance of going to play. And like you said, you know, if you go to the range and you beat balls for 4 hours on a flat lie, you have the same wind every single time, you're on short grass, there's too many controllables, and that's not how golf is played. I want to see guys how they handle themselves when they go play golf and they have tough conditions, or maybe they birdie two of the first two holes and they're two under, and like, what does that do with pressure, and how do they think, and how do they react to that? And that's how you get good. Every player who's ever come through this program, that have reached kind of the next level, had that mentality of just wanting to play golf.
So how do you best strike the balance between the range versus playing? Are you playing 7 days a week of golf plus adding in the range plus the putting green? What does a normal week of a high level golfer look like that's getting prepared for competitions?
Yeah, it's kind of different with everyone because like everyone's got different needs or things that they need to work on. So, but I like to kind of sprinkle in like, okay, if we're going to go play today, we're going to go to the range and put in a good warm up practice session for four, and then we go golf, and then they do a bit of a warm down session. And that way you're still kind of working on things on the range and making sure things are where it should be. And yet you're still playing the golf and going out and just competing and not and being athletic instead of kind of worried about where your hands are in the back of your swing.
So, from your perspective as a coach, obviously not every golfer is built the same. Are you going and trying to build technical swings? Worried about hands in the backswing and where do we put them? What's kind of your feel for coaching a full team, and it's not just one-on-one with one player, or you're not just a swing coach. How do you go about helping the players perform at their highest level? From your seat.
Yeah, it's interesting because, like, again, everyone's different, and but the one thing I learned through my experience is that you don't have to be perfect. You don't have to have the right. A lot of it is confidence, and so like I don't make swing changes with guys that come in. You know, there might be a little couple tweaks here and there, but real basic stuff because I want our guys to like literally not think like. You know, I want you to be able to go and compete and not think. So we do a lot of I'll do certain drills that the team does. A lot of it is competitive based. So whatever we're doing, there's some kind of element of competition within the team, and I want those guys to be competing and wanting to beat their friend and their teammate, and I want them to hate losing. But they're also kind of the environment is that they're still buddies and best friends. So that's the kind of I just try to get as much competition as possible. Sprinkle in a little bit of the technical, if you want to say, but it's very, very limited. I again, I've seen guys at the tour level win, PGA Tour events with what people would think would be not traditional golf swings or things that, okay, well, that's a flaw. Well, it's not if you don't believe it is and you have the confidence to go out and use it.
Yeah, I always feel like it's the confidence of usage. Obviously having a diversity of skills and shots is very helpful, but sometimes it's better, I feel like, to just simplify and know that at least I know the ball's always going to be hooked or always going to be drawn, depending on like the player. Rather than like, I don't know if it's going to go a little bit left or a little bit right or way left or way right. But just having some consistency that seems to be beneficial. Is that something you used in your own game, or are you one of those guys who like, I wanted to have every shot in the bag?
No, I went with what I knew. I drew the ball And I didn't try to be something I wasn't. So I would hit that draw every single time. And I had the confidence to aim it at water and draw it off the water, knowing that it would never go straight or go right towards the water. The other aspect of that, which, flows into every sport. And with golf, like, I want our guys to be athletes. Like, you have that time over the ball and your mind's racing. You almost don't let yourself be an athlete. And it's like, if you're playing hockey or basketball and you receive a pass, or you see a guy open and you just pass it, you don't think of the technique to make that pass. And or that one timer or whatever it is. And golf, I want, our guys to have that same kind of competitive reaction. And it's harder in golf because you have that time. But I find, again, that there's a correlation with the guys that play well, that do very well in this game, that can be like that and not think.
It seems like it's not, you don't want them thinking on the technicals as they're playing around, but you're talking a lot about mental and those pieces of the game. So I'm thinking that you're probably like, okay, we want to have our physical game kind of put away. We've worked on it. We've thought about it at the range maybe or during practice. But once we hit competition, we really don't want to be thinking about our swing, and we really don't want to be messing with our swing too much. And we just really want to
Absolutely.
focus on the course, it seems like. How do we manage our way around a course? Is that accurate?
Yeah, very accurate.
Okay. So with that, what are some maybe like common ways that you see players maybe not properly thinking around a course or approaching how they see the game?
I see it on a daily basis, like with especially guys at this level, that they want to be perfect. They want to, don't know how to act when it's, or don't know how to react if they're not playing well. But back to, like, I guess, a technical standpoint, like, guys are always trying to hit the perfect shot or work different shots. If you look on the PGA Tour, there's only like a handful of guys that actually work the ball both ways. And it goes back to that, I'm going to be great at that draw or that cut, whatever's the most natural shot, and just go with it. And it's just tougher and tougher these days with again, the technology and kids wanting to be perfect, and it's just not realistic in the game. No one is perfect. And it's really all about, creating in a practice atmosphere, creating like a station of awareness, basically. If you're putting, like, having alignment sticks down and just making sure things are where it should be with alignment without having to think about it. And you're literally training yourself to be automatic on the golf course, to where you're not thinking anything. You just kind of go into autopilot. And it's definitely tough to kind of get these kids to understand that and accept the bad shots.
It's tough to accept anything bad, right? But
Exactly.
it sounds like if you're trying to hit the perfect shot every time, it's not possible. And it's probably
No,
more the
no.
pursuit of perfection rather than the actual perfection itself that we need to get our mindset into. Like we want to strive to be better. We want to strive to have perfect. I remember having Marty St. Louis on this podcast, and he was like, yeah, I never played a perfect game. Like the closest I got was I made three errors. Like
Yeah.
one, I make three errors every single shift. That's why he's in the Hall of Fame. But just like that mindset of going in, like, yeah, I'm gonna shoot to play the best game possible, but understanding like I can't beat myself up. That's counterproductive if I'm not having, perfect everything.
Yeah, and really, that pursuit of perfection is a great way to describe it. But when you go play, it's still understanding and knowing the game, and understanding that I'm not going to be perfect out here. I could hit one in the water, and I'm okay with that because I've put in the work. It will pay off.
Another thing that I'm curious about is the player that like loses their game, as they say. Like, how do you come back from losing your game? One, I know that can be a bit of a mental thing, but do people tend to go back to their golf swings and mess with the golf swing, or people go toward their mental? Have you ever lost your game a little bit? I feel like everyone's done it at some point.
Yeah, and you know, I kind of lost actually a little bit of my driver when I was playing towards the end of my career, and it is crazy. It's like it's that mental aspect of it. Plus, you start to go to the technical side of things, and usually it's a little bit of that, you know, spending too much time on the technical side, and then the mind changes to where you're. You know, you start thinking completely irrational thoughts that don't make sense, and it's this like fight or flight response, and it's that it is it's crazy to kind of go through, and you just it's a kind of a weird. You feel like you don't even want to watch have people watch you hit a shot, and you know, prior to that, it was like you wouldn't even think of something like that, and but yeah, I see guys. We've had guys on our team that have dealt with that. We've had, you know, there's guys like a Henrik Stenson, for example. I feel I've heard stories where he's lost his driver twice in his career, and it's part of the reason why he hits his 3-wood all the time, but he's recovered from that twice.
Yeah, I remember there were tournaments where Tiger just would not, like, he'd refuse to take his driver out of the bag. Yeah, okay, so you think most of it's probably mental rather than technical, and kind of just letting your body find the club again, or the swing, or whatever the issue is when you lose part of your game.
Yeah, and I know with me, I always kind of I didn't want to own up to the fact that it could have been the mental side of things, and I waited too long. I always kept okay. I'd work on the technical side. I'd go to the range and I'd hit the ball perfect. I'd play a practice round. I'd hit the ball perfect, and then literally the next day, teeing it up on the first hole, I didn't know where the ball was going. So it's definitely a little bit of both, but more definitely more of the mental side of things.
Excellent. What about the opposite of this? You know, like, what was the best tournament you've played, or best tournaments you've played, and what was that like in comparison?
Yeah, like you know, I look back at like some of that stuff, and it when you're playing really well, golf is very easy, and you know, you there's no real, you know, you just kind of stand up, you see where you got to hit it, and you hit it, and there's no other thought, and you have, you know, just the level of confidence that you have, and the clarity you have in your mind of what you need to do, and you know. And it's fun. Like it's literally fun to be out there competing and knowing that you're going to win or you're going to hit the shot you need to hit here. And you know, so it's a complete different feeling. You know, you go from again feeling like the game is the easiest thing in the world to it's the hardest thing. And they're like, what am I doing?
Yeah, do you have a single tournament or two that stick out in your mind? And like, maybe talk us through what that week was like. Like, did you come into the week and
Yeah.
just absolutely like, I'm gonna crush this, or is it one of those weeks where you're like, you know what, I don't know where my game's at, but what am I gonna do? Get cut again? So let's just let it flow.
Yeah, a couple really good kind of two different ones and two completely different scenarios. The one where I won on the Korn Ferry Tour in Boise. It was one of the biggest events of the year, and I just kind of went in. I obviously was hitting the ball well, had a lot of confidence, but you know, it just everything was easy. And in fact, I even remember like even between shots and stuff, you know, it's really important as a golfer to kind of disengage from the golf, from what you're doing to kind of, you know, because again, you're out there for a long time and you need to kind of relax the mind a little bit. And I would spend the time in between shots, talking to my wife over there, trying to get football scores for my fantasy football team. And it was so fun to be out there. And again, it felt easy. And, I think I shot for the tournament, 21 under par or something like that. I remember finishing like eagle, par, birdie to win by, I think, one or two. And it was a great experience, the pressure of the situation, but I, it was like loving the pressure of it and the excitement of it. And the other kind of scenario that happened when I was on the PGA Tour, I was playing in Milwaukee, and going into the tournament, I was actually hitting the ball the worst I had ever hit it as a pro, to the point where my caddy and I were sitting there kind of laughing going to the first tee, like, okay, well, we'll see what's going to happen. And I ended up being in the final group on Sunday, and it was the closest I'd ever come to winning a PGA Tour event. And that was a big eye opener, understanding that you don't need to be perfect, and you don't need to have that kind of, I guess you want to call it the A game or whatever it is, to win. And looking at that week, it was more of an acceptance of, I'm going to go in, obviously, I'm going to trust whatever I've got, but I'm also going to just accept everything. And that acceptance put me in a completely relaxed state to where I could go out and just play golf and enjoy it. And that's what at the end of the week, look, you're sitting there having a chance to win. So that's kind of, it was definitely an interesting experience.
That's amazing. I love that. The thing that sticks out to me from that is just like enjoying the emotions itself, like understanding that emotions are going to come. And I feel like, and I've heard this from a few people, like all emotions are pretty neutral. It's just what your perspective is at that moment, if they're good or bad, and your ability to enjoy them or hate them. So the fact that you're able to just kind of like enjoy the emotions, probably the good and the bad of the round, it's kind of like life. There's ups and downs, there's good shots, bad shots, good lies, bad lies. Some shots turn out great, others not so great. And just having acceptance of where you are, like the people that seem to have that level of ability to accept just it is what it is, tend to be the people that come across as relaxed and in control of what they can control, and just letting life flow and hitting almost like that flow state of like, yeah, it is what it is. But I love the fact that you were checking golf scores or fantasy football scores while you're, throwing up one of the best rounds you've played in golf. That's awesome.
Absolutely, and I can I look at that as that happened my entire career. Like Omaha, I shot my lowest competitive score. I shot 60 on a Saturday of the tournament, and I'm put myself in the lead, and it's the same kind of thing where like I find those distractions. Like I love nature, so I'm like sitting there, walking and looking in ponds for fish and, all that kind of stuff. I'm distracted by that in between shots and yet focused. And I think that there's a lot to be said about that. I think it's really, and going back to what you said about like acceptance, level of acceptance, but there's a competitiveness in it. Like I, again, like I hate to lose, and I absolutely hate hitting a bad shot, but there's that acceptance. There's a fine line of that acceptance and like, oh, I hit a bad shot, or I don't have my game today, I can't play well. I can accept that. No, that there's a competitive component to it as well. And this inner drive that you just have to play well, but the acceptance. It's a weird thing where you kind of justify yourself to yourself in golf. And it's part of the reason golf's such a strange thing where there's I'm kind of going off on a tangent, but like guys that I've come across that are really good have this kind of blind acceptance or confidence, and it's illogical of their confidence. Like I've known guys that are they're great putters, they think they're great putters, but you watch them putt and they're awful, and it's just crazy how that kind of works.
Yeah, and I'm starting to get a picture of what kind of golfer you were, which was like internal fire was burning, But externally, everyone would probably think you're pretty relaxed on a golf
Yeah.
course and well behaved. But inside, you were
Absolutely.
just burning to like hit the best shot possible.
Yep, that's a great way to describe it.
The thing that we kind of keep touching at that I really want to draw to the forefront is just like that idea of having confidence, but also having the understanding and honesty with yourself to respect yourself about where your game is, what you're trying to work on, and having that ability to self-correct well. I feel like in team sports, we don't talk about this much, but when you get to an individualist sport where it's more on you, just having that ability to improve is super critical. And the best way to do that is have the confidence of like, yeah, I may not be where I want to be, but I'm working towards it and I know I can get there. But also, okay, here's where this, deficiency may be, and being able to have that self evaluation be very good. It seems like when things go
Yeah.
bad is when that self evaluation is way off kilter, and it's like you almost have to have a like a come to Jesus moment with the player of like, yeah, the person you think you are, or the player you think you are, is not even close to what you're putting down on tape, or the scores you're putting in.
Yeah, and the confidence, like, yeah, as a player, you kind of understand what you need to work on, what you need to, how you need to get better, but there's still this inner belief on, you're in your own confidence and in like what you can do, and you're pretty on a one track mind of like, okay, this is what I got to do, this is what I'm going to do. Like for example, like I had this belief even when I was young that I was going to play on the PGA Tour, and nothing was going to deter me from that. And every step along the way, whether it was good or bad, was just part of the process. And I never once varied. Like coming to college is like, okay, that's just one of the parts that I need to do to get to the PGA Tour. And I just kept getting work, had that belief. I kept getting better every year. And then I turned pro and I'm like, okay, this is the process. This is where I need to go and to get to where I need to go. And that was kind of my mentality the entire way. And I never doubted the process at all. And it gave me a lot of confidence.
So, I've got some things that I want to focus on with the program that you've created or taken over and taken to the next level from the legend, Mr. Page. Your teams have consistently been all academic, which I think is amazing. You can marry great sport performance with great academic performance and preparing for the next step, especially with golf, like. Very few make it one, and if you do make it, you're your own business. So I think there's a big component of being quite smart about building your team and your affairs and all of that. But there's more than just showing up and doing the golf. Another thing that I've heard about your team is about the players themselves, actually clean their own facility rather than having a janitor come in and take care of everything for them.
Yeah.
And the benefits to that. So I'd love to hear more about that. And then I've got a few more.
Yeah, I just the biggest thing with that, like, it's funny when we bring in recruits and we show them around the facility and we talk about things like that, and we talk about, our guys will go out, and the women, we'll go pick the range, pick balls. We hit them, we go pick them, maybe once or twice a week. And that kind of mentality is just kind of, I guess, taking ownership of the program, of the facility, and respecting all that, and respecting all the kind of the history of the program. When you walk into the building and you walk into the main hallway, you see all the pictures of the All-Americans on the left, and then on the right is all the academic All-Americans. And every kid wants to be on that wall. When it comes down to, like, cleaning it and picking the balls, I think it's just part of the process. It's part of them, again, taking ownership of that. And whether it's just walking in one day and there's maybe a piece of garbage on the floor, do they, do you have pride in the program to pick that up and throw it in, or do you just leave it there and hopefully let someone else pick it up? And
I think that's important aspect of good teams, that they do things like that. They do those little things, and it's you always kind of hear, I've read some the odd book, you know, like of these high level teams doing stuff like that, whether it's cleaning the stadium or after a match, or you know, the locker rooms and stuff like that. I think it's a pretty cool thing and very important for them to do.
Beautiful. When you recruit kids to Kent State, you know, one, what are you looking for? And two, I don't know about you, but I actually almost like kids that may be having a tough go at it. Like you can still see the talent is there, but there's a level of frustration, and you can see how they're able to handle that, because obviously resilience is going to be super important, especially if you're going to an environment where maybe you were the best at where you were, but now you're going to be very similar to a lot of other people, and being able to keep your head and battle through is going to be extra vital. So, I'm assuming that might be similar for golf, but what else are you looking for as you're looking to recruit kids into the collegiate ranks?
And there's a lot of factors, like obviously, you know, what you're describing, like that competitiveness, that drive. I love seeing guys, you know, if I'm watching them in the recruiting process and they're not playing well, you know, how would they handle that, handle themselves? Because like when you're playing really well, again, golf is easy, and it's easy to act proper. And it's, you know, it's those guys that that kind of have that drive that you some of it you can't even see, and it's that competitiveness, that able to win, and you know, the resiliency is such a big aspect of it, because like when we're competing in college golf, you know, you're out there playing 36 holes for the first two rounds in a day, and you know, you might get off to a bad start. How are you going to handle that? And you know, there's the element of talent, there's the element of like, okay, does this guy hit it far? But like even with all that stuff, there's these other aspects that are important. Like, you know, just because you hit it far doesn't mean, you know, you're going to be good enough to play here. And so it's a mix of everything, and we have a wide variety of guys. We have guys that don't hit the ball very far but are good players, and we have the long hitters that you know. So it can be a difficult thing, because you're watching these kids when they're, you know, 15, 16, 17, and you know, you don't know how they're going to be when they're in college for the, you know, independent, you know, and it's there's so many different factors that contribute to that level of play. But it really kind of starts with, you know, if we make a consistent kind of culture within our program, no matter who comes in, they kind of in a way kind of fall in line with that.
Yeah, they enter the competitive culture and gotta find their way through that.
Yeah.
I like that. So within golf, you've touched on it a little bit, but it can become a very technology heavy sport. You got range finders, you've got cameras, you know, you've got programs telling your spin rate and all of these things. I'm curious of, you know, what is the big technology? How are you guys using it? Are you using it to plot out what's the best way around a course? Is it more just around the practice range these days? I want to say college golfers are allowed a range finder, but I'm not 100% sure on that.
We use the range finders. The problem you have with those, which again, they're great to have, but we've noticed like kids will, you know, they'll get in a tournament, and or they're just playing around a golf, and they just laser the flag and they hit the flag, and you know, anyone knows, you get to like the next level, or you get to, you know, good players, you know, might have multiple yardages in their head. You know, if it's 150 to the pin, they kind of know what it is to carry the front bunker or something like that. And kids get so kind of like almost one dimensional, where they just laser and hit. And so you kind of try to work through that and teach the kids to kind of look at more than just that. But other, you know, with technology now, like, you know, we have TrackMan or big machines within golf programs in the golf world. You know, these things are basically radar systems that, you know, man, they cost like $25,000. So they're crazy expensive. And they track all your data for every shot you hit. So basically you can be on the range and you set up the TrackMan behind you and you hit a shot. And it literally tracks the spin rate, the launch, the base angle, like everything, the ball flight. That can get a little crazy because from a technical standpoint, guys get so caught up in that, in those numbers, instead of like physically watching the ball. But you know, during the winter months, like having that in your hitting bay and playing, like you literally on a TV play virtual golf. So there's some really cool benefits to it. It's just about using it the right way.
All right. What about getting away from the sport? Like, is there benefits to taking a break? Should players take breaks, or is it more of a, you know, you got to keep at it?
You're starting to see kids more and more, I guess, not take those breaks. You know, kids that are, again, like kind of one-dimensional with the sport. So they you know, played golf at a young age and they maybe were pretty good at it. So they're like, okay, I'm going to play golf. I'm not playing any other sport. I'm not a big fan of that. I want kids that play multiple sports. That's another kind of recruiting thing where, like, I love kids that play all these different sports. The break, you know, again, everyone's a little different with that, but like I lived in Pennsylvania throughout my entire career. So I would take a good month, almost a month off. Even when I was, I guess, playing on the PGA Tour, and that time off definitely revitalized me. And I came into the season ready to go. And I love the challenge of the start of the spring of kind of like figuring out a little bit of my game, getting the rust off. But that was all part of the process for me. And I think that you see that more obviously in the northern kids, but that are, it's easier to accept that time off. But you know, it seems like more and more of the kids I recruit, they're spending time playing tournaments in the winter and going down south to practice and stuff like that. And it you know, it's good, but it's also I think there's some negative to it as well.
Yeah, I liked what you said. There's like a refreshment and excitement about coming back when you did take the break. So there's probably some benefits to just your body being able to reset to normal daily life, but also that excitement of actually getting back after into something that you enjoy and avoiding burnout, which is a very real thing. I know we see a ton of it in hockey with these players that at age 10 and under or 12 and under are just playing year round. They're playing all these select tournaments because they're getting the invites and whatnot. And a lot of those kids fall off. You know, some of them do persevere, but I was looking back with my brother who played a ton of AAA hockey and did some of those tournaments. A lot of players that my dad would circle of like, okay, these were the best players, actually fell to the wayside and they're not playing anymore. Or like their careers were extremely short versus kids that were further down would have a lot better careers that, you know, didn't play hockey year round or play other sports, you know, and all the benefits that obviously come with that. I'm curious from your perspective, you know, what are some things that you take from golf and put on a hockey rink when you go to play hockey, or what's some things you stole from hockey and use with your golf game?
That's a good question. I don't know. I've always kind of just, other than, you know, I don't know. I've never really made any kind of comparisons with any of that stuff other than the fact that just, you know, the competitiveness and just the love of it. You know, I would say that's probably the biggest thing, you know, just, you know, my entire life, I've done those kind of things, like played hockey, played golf, played basketball because I love it. And I love just being out there. And whether it's golf, just kind of walking out there, hitting shots, or hockey, you know, it's just, so something I've always loved from a very young age. I love kind of all sports, and I would say that would be the biggest takeaway from or comparison that I've made with any of the sports.
Beautiful. All right. I've got the final question, and we'll say like a half a question at the very end, or maybe something I've pulled out. So you've played with some unbelievable golfers, or you've been around or coached. You know, you mentioned Corey Connors, you mentioned Ben Curtis, you've got Mackenzie Hughes. You know, what separate those type of players? You know, I would probably put yourself in there as well, of the guys who are truly unbelievable golfers that maybe are able to make a career out of it compared to maybe the rest of the golfers out there.
Yeah, like, you know, it's interesting because, like, I've always kind of seen, like, people come from different backgrounds, different cultures, but they have this, like, inner drive and belief in themselves. And some of that, some guys are outgoingly cocky, some guys are not, and they keep their reserve, but they have this belief. They have a work ethic that is so different. You know, someone like a Ben Curtis. Ben Curtis, you know, was an extremely good player his entire career. He, you know, we kind of joke that he probably didn't practice as hard as everyone else on the team, but he practiced smart. And he got absolutely the most out of his game. And, you know, whether, you know, it's a short game or whatever. And then, you know, you've got a guy who hits it 40 yards by him, but, you know, doesn't have the same kind of drive. And, you know, the one consistent thing I see in all those guys is this competitive drive. And, you know, and that's the one thing that they want to compete. They want to get better. They want to win. And, you know, those guys, those are the ones that have the longevity in the sport, that have and you see guys that kind of, you know, they go about the business, they do their things, they do the what they think the correct things are, but they don't really have that drive. And it's tough to kind of identify, because you see it. You see guys do things that you're like, oh, how's that guy doing that? Well, something inside him, he just is determined and almost wills himself to do it. And it's pretty impressive once you see it. And it doesn't come along very often. That's why you don't have, you know, all these, you know, players turning pro and making it the PGA Tour or winning on the PGA Tour, because it's hard and you have to have this unique drive.
Wow. Thank you for sharing that. That was really cool to hear the answer on that. Down that same vein, you were kind of a player that would inspire others. I know that now multiple PGA Tour winner Mackenzie Hughes was inspired by you when he was a young golfer. I would love for you to share that story.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting. Like, you know, I, for me as a golfer, I'm going through, like, I don't realize, maybe I didn't realize, like, the impact you have on some of these kids. I try to go always out of my way to kind of, if I see kids in the crowd, giving them golf balls or giving them a signed glove, and just things like that. I love doing. I love putting a smile on those kids' faces. And I know at the Canadian Open one year, it was a practice round, and there was a connection with my coach and Mackenzie Hughes, and Mackenzie ended up basically letting him carry the bag for a par three. And I never even really thought too much of it. And then down the road, you hear this story, you hear Mackenzie talk about it, you hear, you know, he comes to Kent, and it's just pretty cool that you might have that kind of a little bit of an impact on someone. And, you know, obviously, you know, what Mackenzie's done, winning two PGA Tour events, and what a, you know, career he's had at Kent and at the professional level. It's kind of cool that, you know, you might have this little speck of help along the way, if that makes sense. And it's definitely rewarding. And you know, now as a coach, you know, you try to have this kind of influence on these kids that they, you know, make the right decisions on and off the golf course, and things that, you know, hopefully they go on to, whether it's professional golf or professional business world, you know, you hope they're successful, and that you have a little bit of a you can contribute something to that, to them.
Yeah, it takes a village, but you know, there's lots of little moments where we can inspire, give confidence, hope, belief, etc., whatever it is. Truly amazing. And the last thing that I wanted to touch in, and I'll let you bring up anything you'd love to talk about, is just the idea of kind of what you've talked about, which there's so many ways to play the game. For golf, it's more about, do you have an effective swing that can hold up under pressure? You know, and I think there's a lot of similarities to that, to ice hockey and life, of, you know, many ways to play the game of life or play the game of hockey, but, you know, having something that you can have confidence in that will hold up under the pressure and the rigors of life, the sport, et cetera, are super important. So I'll just make that comment and then leave the door open for you.
Yeah, no, it's always kind of interesting, kind of reliving some of the stuff and talking about the process, because I don't do it enough. And it there's some you know, golf is a sport that, you know, has such an impact on lives and your own life. Like someone who plays golf, whether they're a pro or not, you can do it for a lifetime. And the relationships you meet, you develop on the golf course, you know, can last a long time. And it, to me, it's just a great sport, and it's something that obviously I love playing. And it's something that, again, anything you can do for your entire life, you should get in it.
So golf and hockey, lifelong sports where you get to learn about yourself, develop yourself in very positive ways. Absolutely love that.
Definitely, definitely hoping hockey might not last as long as golf, depending on you know, it's you know, you're always a little worried about injuries and stuff, but it's something you just absolutely love doing.
Yeah. Well, hey, well, I see you're still getting out on the rink. So,
Yeah.
you know, it's still a lifelong sport out there.
Absolutely.
Awesome. Well, John, feel free to add anything, but thank you so much for coming on. This was a fun conversation. Really appreciate your time.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
That concludes this week's episode. Thanks for joining us here at Hockey IQ. If you haven't already, take a quick moment to hit that subscribe button, give us a thumbs up, and drop a review. If you want to be a great teammate, even recommend us to a friend. You can follow us at Hockey's Arsenal on Twitter and Instagram. Check out the website, hockeysarsenal.com, where you can subscribe to the weekly newsletter. You won't regret it. Catch your beauts here next week for a brand new episode.